Golf Smarter number 101 for November 20, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
A golfer's dream, as lived by author Larry Burley.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thank you for joining us for another Golf Smarter podcast. Thanks to everyone who sent me congratulatory emails on reaching 100 episodes. And again, for all those that have posted reviews on iTunes. But a special thanks and a knock it off goes to Sam Rupp of Mount Pleasant, Iowa, who sent me a gift certificate to Edwin Watts Golf as a way of saying thank you for continuing the podcast. Again, I say thank you and you and you and you for listening. Today, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will review the new Nike Sumo Squared Fairway Hybrids. Take two on that, Fred. The new Nike Sumo Fairway Hybrid Squared. Take three, Fred. We'll review the new Nike Sumo Squared Hybrids and give away a Nikent 4DX to a lucky listener. Our guest today is Larry Burley, who has written a new book called A Golfer's Dream, How a Regular Guy Conquered the Golf Digest List of America's Top 100 Golf Courses. We can't even do that on Golf Smarter, so I can't wait to hear how he was able to accomplish it in real life. Welcome, Larry.
Hello, Fred.
How are you?
Keeping me on. I'm doing fine today.
Good. Hey, I got to know, would you do it again?
I don't know if I would do it again, but if I had never done it, I would definitely, I'd recommend to anybody that they do this.
Oh, I bet. But I want to know, now that you've completed and you've played America's top 100 golf courses, would you do it again? Knowing what you know now.
I don't know that I'd do it again. I might. I mean, people have suggested to me that I should continue on and, you know, with the current list and pick up those five or six a year that keep changing. And people have also suggested to me that I go on and try to tackle the top 100 in the world. I can tell you I'm not interested in the top 100 in the world because it just involves too much traveling.
Oh, is that the big thing that got in the way was the travel?
No, but, you know, if you go to play the top 100 in the world, you got to go to Africa, you got to go to Japan. I mean, you got to go to some very, you know, hard-to-reach places.
And traveling all around the United States is not the easiest thing, too, if you're just trying to play golf.
No, that's true. But it's, you know, but when I was doing it, it was quite easy.
Why?
Well, first of all, this was all happened before 9/11, so security wasn't an issue, timing wasn't an issue. Mm-hmm. Flying was a lot easier to do. And for me, one of the things that also happened is once I got about 70% of the way through my quest, I met a guy and became friends with him who has a small plane, a little two-engine plane, and he got really interested in going with me. So we worked out a little deal where he would fly and I would get us on these courses. It was the greatest trade in the world.
yeah, that's perfect. Although my wife would never let me do that. I have a friend who I've been playing golf with for a couple of years, and I saw him a couple of weeks ago. I said, where have you been? He said, I'm not playing golf anymore. I said, why not? He said, I have a new passion. I'm flying. I bought a plane. And I just looked at him longingly, and my wife just grabbed my arm and ran the other direction. She's like, you're not doing that.
My wife, who's a flight attendant, you know, has a great fear of small planes. I don't.
Mm-hmm. I don't either, yeah.
But she didn't like the idea that... She didn't stop me, but she did not like the idea that I was flying on small planes towards the end there.
Years and years ago, my wife gave me a lesson to go flying. And because it's always been, you know, I love keeping my head in the clouds, I guess. But it was like, oh, yes, you can have a lesson. Well, I went and I loved it and I kept going. And then after our second son was born, she went, you're done. That's it. You can't do this anymore. It makes me too nervous. Mm-hmm. So that was the end of that.
I got certified years ago as a glider pilot.
Mm.
After about five or six trips after I completed my certification, I quit. To this day, I don't know why I quit. But man, that is a great avocation, I'll tell you, because it's just you and the wind. I mean, there's nothing closer to being a bird than flying in a glider plane.
Yeah, I've done that once too, and I just loved it because I loved the sound. Have you ever done a hot air balloon?
Yeah, I have. Once.
Oh, me too. All right, well, we digress. I want to talk about golf and traveling around the country, going to golf courses, and here's what I'm really curious about. I've talked to people who like to travel to different golf courses, who look for the top 100, these kind of things. And the thing that I keep getting back is it was a beautiful course. The views were beautiful. Okay? How did you judge how much do you like a course?
That's interesting. You put that in a very interesting way, and actually not that many people ask me that question. But I would say that aesthetics were an enormous part of my judgment. So I would say that the biggest judgment for me was not how difficult, how challenging, which are some of the criteria of Golf Digest, you know, how, or things like that, but although they were a factor. But the biggest factor to me was how much did I enjoy the experience, and the experience was usually based on the aesthetics of the golf course and the camaraderie of the people I was with.
Yeah, so that could be any golf course.
The second part could be any golf course.
Let's kind of establish your level of play. Who are we relating to here?
I am about a 12 index now, and I'd say that during this quest, I fluctuated from about 11 to 15, because some of these courses are so hard that you just, you know, you walked off and you had handicaps going up, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them are terribly difficult.
So you're on the better,
when you're seeing them for the first time.
So you're on the better end of a mediocre golfer.
Yes, that's the average USGA index is 16, and so I went from average to above average.
Okay. All right. So now we know who we're talking to, and we're trying to relate to this. And I'm curious if. Were you focusing on your scores when you were, you know, and you're playing while you were doing this quest?
In the beginning, I did a little, because that's sort of, I think that's golf, I don't know if it's human nature, but it is, but it's golfer nature for sure. But I made a very conscientious decision early on in this quest to switch that. Hmm. And one of the things that I really switched to was, and I almost called this book America's Guest for this reason, but I tried to become the best guest that I could, and that would be my number one priority, was to make this as interesting and enjoyable around as I could for my host. And I did it for several reasons. One, I really enjoyed the camaraderie, but two, I wanted them to walk away going, God, this guy is so interesting, you know, and I know someone at this course, and I'm going to call them and tell them they should host them. So I had an ulterior motive in trying to do that. But the people that I played with, you know, really, really enjoyed playing with me.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. So could it have been any golf course, whether it's one of the great courses or not, based on that criteria?
If that were the sole criteria, yes. But that was not my sole criteria in trying to do this. You know, a big part of the criteria for me to enjoy it was not only the camaraderie with them, but, you know, the aesthetics of what I saw. And the courses that I like the best are by far the most beautiful, places like Pebble Beach and Cypress Point and, you know, and I don't know if you're... Are you familiar with the Sanctuary in Colorado?
No.
Sanctuary in Colorado is amazing. It was designed by a guy named Jim Eng, who's kind of an upcoming designer now. He's won several awards, but quite recently. And this is a course that's owned by David and Gail Liniger. These are the founders of REMAX. There are no members, and there's no public play. So I said to myself, well, how am I going to get on there?
Yeah, exactly.
So I called the pro shop, and he said, well, Mr. Liniger gives the golf course, he puts on 6 REMAX events a year, and these are for all of his high producers, and he gives the golf course to 12 charities a year. I'm going to fax you a list of charities and their dates, and you can call whichever one you want and sign up to play in their event. So that's how I got on there.
Okay.
But this place, aesthetically, was unbelievable. There's so much elevation change at this golf course that they had to have their golf carts specially designed so that they had enough power and enough electricity in 18 holes to go up and down all the hills that they had to go down with the engine braking and with the acceleration, uphill acceleration.
But these were electric carts and not the motorized gas
lane? Yep, and they were cement trails, too. And there were places there, I swear, this is in not too far from Castle Pine, so it's about 20 or 30 miles south of Denver, or maybe 50, where you could see from Pikes Peak, I swear you could see from Pikes Peak to the Wyoming border, which has to be 100 or 150 miles.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Beautiful.
The first hole, you're standing on a cliff that I swear it's 175 or 200 feet drop in elevation to the fairway. And you're also, you know, at 7,000 feet in elevation, which means your ball is going about 10 or 15% further. So you'd hit a ball with that kind of differential and that much elevation drop, and you felt like Superman. I mean, you could easily hit a 3-wood 275 yards, where I normally hit a 3-wood 190 or 200 yards.
Wow. I love those shots where you can just take out a wedge and hit it 250 yards.
Yeah, you could.
No, I can't.
Well, you could here at
this
place. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. And so by creating this goal and then accomplishing it, did you increase your passion for golf or did it diminish?
You know, it went all over the place. There were times when I wanted to quit this quest. There were times when I wanted to quit playing golf. And there were other times where it just was highly fueled by what I was doing. There's no doubt that it fueled my passion for what I was doing, because I made some phenomenal friends along the way, many of whom I still keep in touch with and see on a regular basis.
Well, you know, it's interesting because as you were saying that, I was thinking that could be any golf, any round of golf on any given day that you feel like, I love this game so much, or that's it, I'm done, I'm never going to play again. But then you threw in the curveball there of you met great people along the way.
Right. And, you know, when I've played public courses, which I've played all around the country just in general, you know, I've met some interesting people, but I've rarely found people like that that I kept in touch with. These people, because they took such an interest in my quest and my goal, we really bonded. And so some of them, if I got back to that part of the country, I'd call, like my friend Barkley Douglas in Boston. You know, I'd call him and I'd say, hey, I'm coming back and I'm going to play Catanzet, for example, and I think I could get both of us on. Do you want to go? You know, and he and I went, he was a member at Aronimink, but he and I went to the one in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania together. We played Marion together. We played Pine Valley together. And we played Fisher's Island together.
Hmm.
And all by my, you know, calling him and saying, you know, come on, let's go.
So I've asked you if you would do it again, but now I'm going to ask almost a little differently, what would you do differently if you did it again?
Let's see. Well, to network to get onto these, I had three processes. One was just, you know, calling people constantly and asking them. And by the way, one of the things I really learned is it's amazing how, you know, sometimes you can almost feel embarrassed by asking people to do favors for you.
Oh, absolutely.
But I was always amazed at how more than willing people were to help me. And in some cases, anxious to help me. So my form of networking was being on the phone. And then, you know, since I did this from 92 to 2002, it wasn't really till 96 or 97 that you could really be in touch with people by email with any regularity. Mm-hmm. So I started networking by email. I'd send out these, you know, I'd write a little story about, here was my experience at Shinnecock, and I'd send it off to 50 or 100 people or however many people were on this list. And then I'd say, and oh, by the way, do you know somebody at these five golf courses? And so one of the things I would change today is I'd do this by blogging rather than, you know, trying to do it by email, which would be a lot easier and have potentially have a lot greater reach.
The internet changes everything. I have to imagine that you have amazing stories along the way. So I want to know what was the hardest course to get onto?
Well, that's an interesting question. For everybody that ever does this, without a doubt, it's Augusta National.
Mm.
And it's hard for a couple of reasons. First of all, everybody that has even the least amount of passion for this game wants to go there because they watch it on TV every year. And it's probably the most powerful people in the world that are members there, so getting their attention is not an easy thing to do. And third of all, there is almost nobody, it's not nobody, but it's close to nobody, that lives really in the vicinity of Augusta National. And so you're not just asking someone to take 4 hours out of their afternoon and play, you know, have a fun afternoon of golf with you. You're asking them to travel. I mean, you're asking them now for 2 or 3 days of their time.
Oh, my gosh, it's that much. I was thinking maybe a day.
By the time someone travels there, plays with you, goes home. Yeah. And most of the people that go there rarely go for one day. Most members that go there go, you know, they take their foursome. You could not pick up a game at Augusta to save your life. So you better bring, you know, whoever you're going to play with, if you're a member, because otherwise you're going to be playing by yourself.
Well, you talked about one guy in the book who had the 14-club rule.
Yeah.
Outrageous. Go ahead and explain that, please.
I met a few people along the way that would collect golf clubs to join, like some people just collect golf clubs to play with. You know, he joined everywhere he could, and he had enough money to do it. But so there were people like that. But getting back to the thing about Augusta.
Yes.
So it's hard for all those reasons because you're really asking somebody to do a lot. And members, I know this is going to sound strange, but even though these are the most powerful people in the world, the one thing they live in fear of is the chairman of Augusta National, because they do not want to get thrown out. And if you don't follow the rules precisely, your bill may not show up at the end of the year, and that's their way of signaling to you that you've been thrown out of the club. So they're very careful about following their rules. It's interesting. But, so for me, Augusta was not the hardest, because early on I met a member from Augusta who happened to work one floor up from me in my office building, and he and I met in the bathroom. So, you know, he was
How did the conversation start there?
Yes. So he was a prominent citizen of Minnesota, so I knew who he was, and I'd greet him, and we'd talk a little, and then finally one day I said, "You're a member at Augusta National, right?" You could just see the look on his face because he knew what was coming.
Yeah, of course.
Finally, I said to him, "Well, what am I going to have to do to get onto Augusta National?" Which seemed like a more polite way than saying, "Hey, would you take me?"
Sure.
And he said, "You're going to have to become awfully good friends with a member." And so I proceeded to become extremely good friends with him, and I see him to this day. I mean, we still play golf 2 or 3 times a year and have dinner or something a couple of times a year. So I see him half a dozen times a year at least. And you know what? Every time we're together and we meet some third party that he knows, the first thing he does is he starts bragging about his buddy who played the top 100.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. The stories must be unbelievable. And you're the one who took all these stories and put it into a book. That's amazing.
So that's, I'd say, for most people, the hardest to get on.
Sure.
But one of the hardest ones for me, because, you know, about 18 of these are public access. They're easy. You just pay your money and you go.
Yeah, but that's only 18. You did 100.
Right. And the others were a product of networking. And I would network onto these places. But one that no networking and no money would help was Bethpage Black on Long Island. Hmm. And it's a public course. And if you're a resident of New York, you can sign up to be able to get tee times through their automated phone system, which is also hard to do. But for someone like me, I can't get access to their automated phone system. I couldn't find anybody who could help me out. And so basically what I had to do is I had to drive there at 2 a.m, sleep in my car, and they have these numbered stalls. So the first one that arrives gets in stall number 1, and then and on up to 6 or 10 or whatever they've got, or 20. And then someone comes and wakes you up at 6 a.m., you know, sees to it that you get out of your car, and you better not be standing in line for a buddy. I mean, if there's two of you that are planning to play, they better both be in the car. you can't hold a spot in the line for someone. I stood in line, and I'm going, well, what if I get up there? And now these people are in line for all five courses, because there's five courses out there. There's black, red, green, blue, whatever.
Right.
But I got up there, and I got it at 7:30, and I got a tee time with a different group that was going to go off at 10:30. But as I'm standing there, I'm asking myself, what if I get up there and there's nothing left? Am I going to come back and do this again? And might I have to come back a third time or a fourth time? Because that's what would have happened. So in its own unusual way, I think Bethpage Black was by far the hardest for me to get on, because nothing could help.
Interesting. Which was the course, or what was the first hole that you got onto, teed off, and went, yes, I did it?
Oh, Augusta National would probably... Well, actually, I think that would be Cypress Point, because that was one of the first ones that I got... It wasn't the very first one I got hooked into. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first ones. So I'll tell you a little bit about how that worked. A friend of mine here in Minneapolis was a guy named Ron Soskin, was one of the first guys to help me out. And he said, I have a friend that I went to law school with who's now the tennis pro at Piping Rock. I'm going to call him. And he called him, and he set up for me to play both Winged Foot and the National Golf Links of America. So I went out there. I did that. I never met this man, because he set me up with his father-in-law, and he set me up with another friend of his at Winged Foot. But then afterwards, I sent him a book to thank him, and a little thank you gift, and I called him, and he said to me, is Cypress Point on your list? And I said, yeah, thinking, you know, Cypress Point's going to be one of those really tough ones for me. He said, well, my father-in-law is a member at Cypress Point, and I think I can help you get on Cypress Point. Well, Cypress Point has a deal where they send off two foursomes every morning at 7:30 that are unaccompanied. So you have to be sponsored by a member, but the member doesn't have to be there, which makes it a lot easier to get on, right?
Sure.
So he set that up. So I now have a tee time at Cypress Point for about 5 or 6 weeks forward, and I've got three slots I can fill. And Fred, I was the most popular guy in the golf community in Minneapolis, because I was going to invite three people to go with me to Cypress Point, and I was going to choose who they were.
And what about all your friends out in California?
I think most of them had played. I actually, one of the people that I invited along was a guy from California.
There you go. I still haven't played it. Oh, I'm sorry. You've already accomplished it. And did you come along famous people? Do you have stories about people that were just outrageous? I mean, like the character who had to have 14 clubs in his bag and belonged to 14 clubs. Kind of tell me people stories. I love this kind of stuff.
I met tons of people that are interesting, but I met two that you might know about. Well, one you'll definitely know about. When we played Winged Foot, We were on a par 3, the 17th hole, I think it was, 16 or 17, and all of a sudden this ball came drifting over from the other fairway. Someone had either hooked it or sliced it terribly, and it landed on our green. And we got up there, and and my wife is with me, by the way, and up walks Donald Trump.
Wow.
And he quickly tells us a story about, oh, I'm so sorry, I knocked this ball over here, and, you know, I just don't play golf that often anymore. I'm such a busy guy, but the only reason I'm here is because, you know, this golf guy from Golf Magazine is doing an interview with me, and he wanted to do it around a round of golf, so we're playing golf here. And then he trotted off, and that was kind of a funny story. And another one that might be of interest is when I played golf at Olympic in San Francisco. I played with a guy named Mike Butler. At the time, Mike Butler was president of the San Francisco Gift Mart. And he was about 50 years old or 55 years old at that time. But when in his younger days, he played on the PGA Tour. Not very successfully, but he played on the PGA Tour. So we're getting ready to tee off, and this guy comes out, the head pro comes out from the pro shop and says, hey, there's a guy here from a little mini tour that's on his way through, and he really wants to play the Olympic Club. And Mike, I thought you'd be a good guy to host him since you used to be a PGA player. And Mike says, yeah, bring him along.
Oh, no, I can only guess where you're going with this. Keep going.
So we played. It was a very interesting day of golf because these two were talking about what it was like to be on tour 30 years ago as opposed to struggling with what he's doing today, this young guy is doing today. and little by and so I was like a fly on the wall. It was a very interesting day. And at the end, he says to me, he says to both of us, "Well, here's, you know, my results come up Wednesday after, you know, Wednesday's in USA Today if you want to follow me." And he knew I was in the concert business. Well, a year later, he called me. He said, "You said, do you remember me?" And I said, and he told me his name, and I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, I'm on the PGA Tour now, and I'm looking for some concert tickets to take my wife to this show down here in Florida, and his name is Jerry Kelly."
Okay.
And Jerry Kelly, at that year, had won $2 million on the PGA Tour. He's done... He's not a huge name, but he's very successful on the PGA Tour.
Of course, we were all thinking, Tiger, Tiger, Tiger. That's a name you'd be remembering. It'd be easy to remember. I need a tip. I need something, you know, that the audience on this show, well, forget the audience. I love to walk away with something that's going to give me a lesson about, you know, how to improve my life on the golf course. And you may be able to help me on this one, because knowing that my rounds of golf could be similar to yours in the sense that I love to look at the environment, wildlife, get into conversations with people, I have a tendency to forget what hole I'm on, or, oh yeah, I remember my second shot back on the fourth. I mean, it's like, you know, I just take one shot at a time and everything is a blur behind me. And you wrote a book. How do you remember which hole you're on, which hole is which, and what you did? Do you have little methods that you can teach me?
That's a really tough one, because there were times when I would finish a round of golf and all I could remember was maybe a half a dozen really, you know, holes with significant features, or something significant happened on it, like maybe, you know, like if I had a particularly good score on a hole. So they were really hard for me. But when I got to the San Francisco Golf Club, it's one of the things that I worked on. And the way I would work on it is, at the end of every hole, as we were walking to the next tee box, I would review in my mind what were the features of that hole and what were my shots and what were my partner shots. And then when I got to hole number two, I would go back to one and two and do the same thing. And when I finished the round, I was able to remember a lot more, but it was because I was actively participating in it. Now, what this came in conflict was I was telling you earlier that one of my key goals was always to be the best guest that I could. Mm-hmm. Well, when I was going through this process, I wasn't talking to my playing partners very much.
Right. Well, right.
It's something that I eventually abandoned for that reason, but it really did help. But another thing that I learned from this was, you know how you often, I'm sure this probably happens to everybody that listens to this, you know how you often go to a party and you get introduced to someone and 5 seconds later you forgot their name?
Ugh. Party? It's just life, yeah?
In life, right. Yeah. Well, this would happen to me. You know, so I'd show up, I'd get introduced to my host, and sure enough, you know, 15 seconds later, I've forgotten his name, and especially if I'm playing with him and two of his friends.
Yeah.
So I would really make an effort to remember it for as long as it took me to get to my scorecard and write them down.
Right. And which hat that person's wearing. I mean, I have to write, when I write somebody's name down, I write down something distinguishing about their physical so I know that I'm not confusing the two guys.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea. And so then I would refer to it, and then what I would do is I would make an effort right from hole one, every time I addressed them, to address them by name. And by hole three or four, I pretty much had their names down. But I continued to make an effort to do that.
Excellent. Excellent. So all through the book, you have great quotes. And we love to end this show with quotes every week, and a lot of the quotes are submitted by our listeners. I'm just thumbing through right now. This is a game. That's all it is. It's not a war.
That's Jack Nicklaus.
Fair. Oh, I didn't know I was going to test you. Okay, here we go. The only time my prayers are never answered is playing golf.
Billy Graham.
Okay,
Reverend Billy Graham.
that's too easy. All right, I'm going to go for one more here, and then I'm going to... Okay, the three things I missed most during my 2 years in Hong Kong were my mom, American food, and golf. Not necessarily in that order.
I don't remember. remember the guy's name, but he's the vice president of Bear Stearns.
Bill Foster. Very good. So,
but let me tell you one of my favorites.
Please. That's what I was going to ask you.
There was a quote from Bob Hope, who was a member at Cypress Point.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, "We had a membership drive at Cypress Point one year. We drove out 50 members.
Larry Burley, the book is called A Golfer's Dream, How a Regular Guy Conquered the Golf Digest List of America's Top 100 Golf Courses. Larry, thanks a lot.
Fred, can I just say one other thing?
Absolutely.
I'd like to tell you a little bit about, so I self-published this book.
Okay.
I, at one point, I went out, I submitted it to publishers, I submitted it to agents, I got nowhere, I decided to self-publish, and I think the whole framework of, so first of all, so this book is not available in bookstores in general. It's available online. It's got its own website, which is www.golfersdreambook.com, and it's also available on Amazon, and there's a couple other places, but those are the two best. But one thing I've really learned in this process is I think the publishing industry could begin to change dramatically, because you know, Amazon is now the second largest seller of books in the United States, behind Barnes & Noble, and it's growing so fast that it's likely to become first in the next couple of years. And that's going to really create opportunities for people who are self-publishing, because suddenly they can get distribution like they could never get before. So, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about how the, you know, how the Internet changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly changed the music business, as I'm sure you know.
Yes.
And now it's beginning, at least in some small way, to change the, possibly change the publishing business. So this book isn't available in stores. I'm not trying to do general distribution, but you know, it's available at the second largest bookseller in the United States, possibly in the world, and that's Amazon.
And you can go again to golfersdreambook.com.
Correct.
All right. Well, best of luck. We hope that you make some sales out of this conversation.
Thank you very much.
Golf Smarter now presents Nick's Picks with Kenny Nicholson, sales manager for EdwinWattsGolf.com. Kenny keeps us up to date with reviews of new products and new product development. Nick's Picks is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968.
Hi, Kenny. How are you?
I'm good, Fred. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Getting excited about the holidays and being able to spend a lot of time with family. It's always a good thing.
I actually started fasting yesterday to prepare myself for.
Do
for
you
the
do
big
that
Thursday
regularly?
Feast.
Do you do that every year? You prepare yourself physically?
I do. My mom gets so excited, you know, just to be cooking for the whole family. So
how many people you have showing up?
We've got about 12 total. So I've got two sisters, their kids, and mine as well. So, and she goes way overboard. So
now
I don't
is everybody
her, I don't
in
wanna,
the.
I don't want her to feel bad, so I try to eat as much as I can.
Good. Oh, you're a good son.
Oh, yeah.
You're the star,
yeah, just
right?
Ask my mom.
Well, you're the only son, aren't you?
I am.
That's what you just said.
And the baby, so.
Oh.
That's all good.
I am, too. See, no, doesn't that explain a lot that we're doing this together and we're both the babies of three?
Yeah. That's what brought us together.
Yeah. Oh, that's really sick, Kenny.
Let's talk golf, Fred.
I need to know, like, is the family all come from the Florida area? Or you got people in different states that travel in?
I do. I have one that lives in Virginia. My brother-in-law is in the military, the Air Force, and they're at Langley. So
okay.
They'll come in from Virginia, and I've got another sister that lives fairly close. So
All right.
It'll be good.
And your mom is close as well?
My mom is close. I keep her close by.
You are a good son. No wonder everyone loves you so much.
Yeah.
He's a good boy. Hey, we're not going to do any Ask Kennys today because there's so much other business to take care of, but we will do it next week. And if you have any questions for Kenny about equipment or things that you'd like to buy, or you know, like to know more about some things that are out there or new stuff that's coming up, you can always write to us. Go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the Ask Kenny button. Just send your question in there. And if we use your question on this program, we'll send you a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts golf hat. But in the meantime, a couple episodes back, Kenny, you were down in Beaverton, Oregon, or I guess for both of us, it's up in Beaverton, Oregon, at the Nike headquarters, and you wouldn't tell us anything about the stuff you were playing with there, but is it okay? Can we bring it up now?
It's okay now because we actually have one of the items in stock that I wanted to review today. And then some of the other items that are coming out in February are going to be a new Sumo Squared, Fairway Wood. We talk a lot about moment of inertia, MOI. It's buzzword right now in drivers, and it's going to be that way in fairway woods and hybrids as well.
Interesting.
It creates a more stable golf club on impact. And you know, obviously we don't go out there and hit it dead square in the middle of the club face all the time. So when you hit it on the heel or the toe, there's less twisting or movement of the golf club. So you have a shot that's going to be straighter than it was with previous golf clubs.
I'm ready for that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, aren't we all?
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I'll tell you a real quick funny story. I had to reshaft a fairway wood. It broke for some reason, and it was not out of anger. But I reshafted it, and I went out to the golf course and played with it that day, and the epoxy, I guess, had not set up. And sure enough, the first hole's a par 5. I hit a great drive down there, and I've got 3 wood in, and I hit the ball with the 3 wood, and man, this thing just, missed it towards the toe a little bit. And you're talking about moment of inertia not being there. I mean, it was just straight and just dead right, like a, not a banana, but a boomerang. And I was like, man, that's exactly the opposite of moment of inertia right there. And I grabbed the club head in one hand and the grip in the other and twisted, and sure enough, it was completely loose. But you know what?
You twisted it not out of anger. You were just like testing its flexibility.
Exactly. And the guy riding with me goes, man, that's just a very unfortunate thing, but you got to play it as it lies. I'm sorry.
That's not what he said. Come on.
That's exactly right. Sorry, bud. Hopefully it'll dry out before the next time you got to use it.
Yeah. But
Nike has a new Sumo Squared hybrid that's out right now that we actually have in stock for around the $150 range. And a hybrid's one of those clubs where you're using it in the rough, you're using it from the fairway, you're using it off the tee, very versatile golf club. And typically when you miss hit those, you kind of miss hit them a little bit high in what I call right or out towards the toe of the golf club. And anything to help stabilize that golf club at impact is a huge benefit. And with this club, they were able to do that. I don't use a lot of hybrids, and this one here impressed me as much as any that I've ever used before. And I'll read a couple of the bullet points for you. It has what's called hot cryo steel face, which it's a very lightweight face, and they make it thicker in the middle and progressively thinner out towards the edges of the golf club. And the result of that is a more consistent ball speed, maximum distance, and increased forgiveness around the whole golf club face. So what you look at when you miss hit a hybrid or fairway wood or driver for that matter is on off-center hits, what are you losing in ball speed-wise? There used to be, in the old days, a huge difference in ball speed on off-center hits. And with the new face technology that a lot of the manufacturers use, you don't lose as much ball speed on off-center hits. And now to help with moment of inertia, you know, obviously there was a twisting of the golf club whenever you miss hit it on the heel or the toe. So creating one that had a more square face or square head shape and creating a higher moment of inertia, and with this new face technology, you still have a lot of ball speed and you have a more stable club head. So great technology that's come out. I think a huge percentage of the golfing public out there uses hybrids now. And if this is not the one that you try, look at some other square hybrids that are going to be coming out, because it is going to be a huge game improvement club out there. It's kind of like when hybrids came out, everybody was like, what is this? And then people started using them. And, you know, some of the guys are like, this should be called cheating. It's so easy to hit compared to a long iron. Well, this is the next phase of those same golf clubs. They're getting better and more technologically advanced. A lot of things have changed.
And these hybrids have the square head?
That's correct. It has a square. You can go to our website, edwinwattsgolf.com, and view those. It is a square shape. It's similar to the Nike Sumo Squared driver, obviously, but it's a hybrid shape. You know, so it has a face similar to an iron and a face or a shape similar to that of a fairway wood, but much smaller. And it is square in design.
And when you're putting a hybrid in your bag like that, what are you pulling out?
You're pulling out a 2-iron or 3-iron or 4-iron.
Uh-huh.
You're replacing a long iron.
And so for people who have the slower head speed or when seniors play a lot of of the fairway woods that would use these hybrids instead of the fairway woods? And, you know,
yeah, it's important to note that a hybrid doesn't specifically replace a fairway wood. You know, it specifically replaces a long iron. If you have a 7-wood that's 21 degrees loft and a hybrid that's 21 degrees loft, you're not going to hit those the same distance because the fairway wood has a longer shaft. So in essence, you're not creating as much club head speed. So you can have a 7-wood and you can still have a 3-hybrid.
Same degree of loft.
Same degree loft and use them for two totally different reasons.
Really?
The hybrid's probably going to go possibly a little bit higher. You're not going to hit it as far. So even though you have the same loft, you're not going to hit them the same distance. So don't be afraid to have a 7-wood and a 3-hybrid or a 4-hybrid for that matter.
But then you got to lose the wedges.
I
like a lot of wedges. I don't know why.
I like a lot of wedges, too. I play 4 wedges. I have a standard pitching wedge and then a gap wedge.
Your sand wedge.
And a lob wedge. I love 4 wedges.
Yeah, that's where I am.
You know,
sand,
whether or not
pitching, gap, and...
You got to keep 14 clubs in there, and you got to really decide which club you're going to pull out of the bag. And a lot of people, you know, play different courses, and they kind of know, are they going to be playing a lot of long irons on this course? Are they going to be hitting a lot of short approach shots? So you just got to kind of weigh the benefits of the club and whether or not you're going to be able to use it on that particular day.
Now, I know you're only allowed to carry 14 clubs in your bag, but will it be okay to carry 2 bags?
Again, no. It's 14, whether you get it in one bag or 14.
Oh, it's 14 per player.
Yeah,
not
correct.
Per bag.
Yeah.
Oh, darn. I had this idea of lots of wedges in one and lots of woods in the other. I can cover every shot that way. You don't think it's going to fly, huh?
I don't think it's going to fly, Fred.
Okay.
At all.
Okay.
You can take one club per bag and carry 14 bags, but...
Now, that's an idea. Boy, Kenny, you are a forward thinker.
I do not think there's a bag rule.
So, but now we've had many discussions about the idea of shortening the shaft on your driver. And I know you have differing opinion than other. That's a Skype noise. I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do about it. Did you hear it?
I did. I don't hear it on my end.
Oh. Well, maybe the listener can't hear it either. There was nothing there. Don't worry about a thing. So I know that you've had conversations back and forth with listeners who've sent in questions about the shortening 1 inch of a shaft to give you better control. But you say you might be losing not only distance, you might be losing the effectiveness of that club, right?
That's correct.
But you don't want to do that on a hybrid or fairway wood.
No, it's not.
Only for drivers.
Yeah, I mean, it's just when you get into a long shaft. Hybrids, I wouldn't mess with them at all. You know, if that was the case, then every club would be 35 and a half inches in your bag. It'd be shorter. You'd be a lot more consistent. But yet you'd hit your 5-iron and your 6-iron about the same distance as well as your 7 and your 8. You know, cutting things down typically, if you're going to cut a club down, it's going to be in the driver format. And it's not for everybody. I think I've come to that conclusion. Others might not, but...
I'm sorry. It may seem like I'm not paying attention, but I just had an aha moment. So not only do you gain distance on each club because of the angle of the club face, each one's longer as well.
That is correct. There you go.
Oh, my.
Bing, bing, bing. Fred, you got
it. Who am I talking to every week? Why am I not paying attention here?
No, I mean, obviously, each club is longer in length, and you're going to create more club head speed with, whether it's a half an inch on each step, per iron. So you're not, if you had a 5-iron and a 6-iron that were exactly the same length and, the distance is not going to be as great as it is if you take a traditional set and you lengthen them the way that they're supposed to be, a half inch per club or what have you.
And what is the difference in degree? About 4 degrees per club?
It's about 4 degrees per club.
Mm-hmm. So when they say let the club do the work, it's not just the club. Let the club and the shaft do the work.
Correct. Yeah, you're exactly correct. There was a set,
Fred,
several years ago. It's probably been about 10 years ago, and I want to say Tommy Armour made it at the time, but every club in the set was the same length. It didn't fly.
You couldn't sell them, huh?
It sold to some, but
you can get them on eBay now from collectors, right?
Yeah, there you go. So it wasn't, obviously it didn't hit the market or marketplace by storm. So great marketing though.
Well, in the conversation of, now this is a drum roll, please. In the conversation of shafts and whatnot, we are happy to announce that by the time you hear this, there's going to be a new episode of Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. Yay!
Yeah, it was exciting.
It was a good one. So we, Kenny, and look, can we explain something a little bit here, why we've been inconsistent? We apologize. We've been receiving a lot of emails saying, when are you going to do another episode? It's not been very easy to get these technical people, because the marketing people don't like the technical people to get outside very often, but to get the technical people to come on and talk to us about what they're developing, it's not the sexy stuff for these marketers. And so to get them to agree to be on the show has not been as easy as we had hoped. Is that true?
It's true, because we don't just go after anybody at these manufacturers. We try to get the lead engineers.
We had Scotty Cameron on. Does that
Scotty
kind of explain
Cameron,
things?
Yeah, Frank Thomas, John K. Solheim. I mean, the people that we, Tom Stikes. I mean, the guys that we have on the show are these are the guys that are making golf clubs for the world's greatest players. And typically when we do one of those shows, we're requiring about an hour or 2 hours of their time. And they love to, when they get on there, I mean, they just love to go on and on about their products, not just their products per se, but the engineering aspect of the club that we're covering that day. And it is a terrific learning experience. I've been doing this for 14 years, and every time we do one of these shows, I learn something new, as well as this last show that's going to be published right now with UST regarding shafts. There was a plethora of information out there that we discussed, and I think it's going to be great for everybody to listen to.
Right. So
it was a fun episode, too.
It was, and we had Rob Schickner, who is the Director of Engineering Design and Technical Sales for UST, the shaft manufacturer. And Rob was quite gracious in the answers, in the fact that we seemed to be asking the same question over and over again, at least the same answer, which was, get fitted for clubs. My goodness, you know, you really need to. There's a lot to learn. There's so much to cover with shafts because it's just not something that's talked about very much. And he was great. And he did give us a long time. So we are able to turn it into two episodes of Golf Better. So be prepared. We got a couple more episodes of Golf Better coming up, and we're working feverishly to get some more for you as soon as we possibly can. But again, go check it out, Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. You can find it at golfbetterpodcast.com, which will take you to the Edwin Watts Golf site. Or you can find it, of course, in iTunes and subscribe to it. So whenever it shows up, it'll be on your computer and hopefully again in your MP3 or iPod player. So check that out. Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf. Now, Kenny, back to Golf Smarter, where we do giveaways on a regular basis. Thank you to Edwin Watts Golf. And this week we're giving away a Nikent 4DX hybrid or fairway wood. And we have received, 285 entries over the last 2 weeks. And 51 new people have shown up. Thank you so much for entering our contest. And for those of you who continue to try, you know, each time you try, you're getting a little closer. You know, it's like a hole in one. It's going to happen sooner or later. And I've sorted these randomly, and you get to pick a number between 1 and 285 for the Thanksgiving giveaway. And that's going to be number
285. I'm going high. There you go.
And of course, if people go, God, he always goes high. And
I went low last time.
I know, you did. But then they go, God, he always goes low. God, he never goes in the middle. So this one is, you're prepared to ship it, right, Kenny?
I'm prepared, yeah.
Okay, good, because this one's going to Switzerland.
Oh, right.
And why don't you just hand deliver it?
Hey, I wish I could.
This time of year, it's beautiful. Oh, take your clubs, bring some shorts and sunglasses. Yeah, right. St. Moritz, Switzerland. This is going out to Tracy Nader.
Congratulations, Tracy.
And I have a feeling that Tracy and her spouse both entered. And Tracy, it's your prize. You get to have this hybrid or fairway wood. And if your spouse wants to use it, they have to ask permission. All right. Congratulations, Tracy.
Congratulations.
That's awesome. And our next giveaway is going to be happening. Now we're getting into December. It's December. We're getting December 3rd will be the deadline for entries, Monday, December 3rd. And we'll announce the winner on December 4th. And what are we giving away this time?
We are going to give away an OGO bag of your choice out of our catalog. Now, I say bag. I'm talking travel bag, duffel bag, or golf bag. The guys at OGO were kind enough to help us out with this. And you can go
OGO's
to our website.
OGO has been very generous with us.
You can, yeah, you have to admit that.
I do. They even were gracious enough. I'll admit it. They sent me a bag, and they put the Golf Smarter logo on it. I'm blown away. I love my new OGO bag. And they've given away other bags to listeners in the past. But this one is really awesome because you may have a bag you like, but you don't have a good travel bag. Or you may have a travel bag you like, and you don't have a good bag. So you have a choice of a stand bag, a cart bag, a travel bag, a duffel bag. I mean, there's a lot of choices, and all you have to do is go online at edwinwattsgolf.com and check out what the OGO products are in bags. Or if you receive the catalog, and why aren't you receiving the catalog, pick out one of those, and you can whatever. If you win, you can choose whatever you'd like. That's awesome, Kenny.
That's a great prize.
That is a really good prize. Again, deadline for entry is December 3rd, 2007, and we'll announce the winner on December 4th. To enter, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the word contest just below the Edwin Watts Golf banner. Once there, just fill out your shipping information and verification code. Click submit. And while you're on that page, you'll also notice we have a list of all the winners who have ever won and what prizes they have won. So you can see that we do this on a regular basis. So don't go away. Stick around. There are more to come. And also, while you're on the page when you enter, click on that Edwin Watts Golf banner, and that's going to take you directly to the Edwin Watts Golf site, the Golf Smarter page on the Edwin Watts Golf site. And on that page, it gives you full instructions on how you can receive 10% off on your purchases and free shipping. Of course, there are some restrictions that apply, but you do get 10% off and free shipping because you are a Golf Smarter listener. And right now it's holiday time, so you're going to have to start purchasing things for yourself and have your kids sign the card and say, "Daddy, look what we got you."
It's a great time of year to be shopping.
It sure is.
At Edwin Watts Golf.
Promote our economy, please. If you're not going to buy a house, buy golf equipment from Edwin Watts Golf. All right, Kenny, have a great week. Have a great time with your family. Please give your mother my best and everyone else in your family. And we'll talk to you again next week.
You do the same, Fred. Thank you very much.
Thanks again to Larry Burley, author of A Golfer's Dream. You can get more information at golfersdreambook.com. If you'd like to purchase the book, hopefully by the time you hear this or in the immediate future, we'll have links to amazon.com for this and all the books we've ever talked about at golfsmarterpodcast.com. Now, clearly, if you're a podcast listener, you also spend time on the web, and all the rage these days seems to be social networking. And one of the other new additions that we'll be making at golfsmarterpodcast.com is a blog and opportunities for you to comment on the episodes, ask questions of our guests, and communicate with one another. But before we get there, a little podcast social networking is in order. There's a Golf Smarter listener in Germany named Falk, who's planning a golf trip to Florida this December 2007. Since I'm useless when it comes to where to play and where to stay in Florida, I live on the West Coast, that's the East Coast, we'd like to enlist the members of the Golf Smarter team to help him out. If you are in Florida or planning to be in Florida, if you have any recommendations of areas and courses over his two-week stay, send me an email and I'll forward it to him, and then the two of you can put something together. And if you want to plan a golf trip to Germany, I'm sure Falk would be happy to set you up as well. I've got to say that I've received some really funny quotes from listeners in the last few weeks, and we're going to close this week's show with a quote from Leon Nevins of Fort Wayne, Indiana. Now, recently, after a lousy tee shot on a long par 5, he couldn't find the yardage marker to help determine what club to hit next. He finally stumbled upon one that read, "Just hit it." If you have any questions, comments, quotes, requests, or suggestions for Falk, please click on the Hey Fred button at GolfSmarterPodcast.com. Hi, this is Fred Green. Please join Kenny Nicholson and myself for the latest episode of the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast. Our guest is Rob Schickner, Director of Engineering Design and Technical Sales for UST. He'll answer questions about shaft flex, materials, and length.
You should be able to handle the lightest, most flexible shaft at the longest length that you can actually control. So he could make a great playing club at 45, make a mediocre playing club at 44.
It's the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast, free on iTunes, or you can listen directly from your computer at golfbetterpodcast.com.